It's 11 o'clock on a Thursday. Must be time for Green Zine here at WFVR-LP, South Royalton. Henry Swayze is on the line. He's got a lot of information. We're having a guest live in the studio. We'll be joined by Taylor Barnes. A small, at least plot size, farmer over from Pomfret, Vermont, nearby here. Listening to a little waltz as performed by Dick Hyman on the piano and Judy Hyman on violin. And take a deep breath. Yeah, this piece is called Breathe. I want to acknowledge our underwriters here on Green Zine. They've been very helpful to us in more than our 12 years of broadcasting and streaming our music and information programming here throughout the Upper White River watershed at 96.5 FM and also throughout the world at our website, wfvr.org. They include Solaflex, Bale, Building a Local Economy, Royal Trail Works, Daniel Leibowitz, the Upper Pass Beer Company, the First Branch Coffee Company, Solarfest. Don't forget that event is coming up in Brandon, Vermont this year on the 7th, 8th, and 9th. We'll have several programs with guests that are expected to be at Solarfest during the course of the late spring and early summer. The White River Land Collaborative, Wit and Grit, and the Yes We Can Collective. I need to check on our collection. I think it's about to head to the Redemption Center, a little radio redemption. We'll be touching on some local stories, some national stories, some immigration stories, and a Drive EV event happening this weekend down in the Upper Valley. Thanks for joining me on Green Zine. Henry will be joining us in just a little bit. Don't forget, we'll be talking birds as we normally do. Good morning, Henry. How are you today?
Good morning. I am very good. The leaves in Burlington are just beginning to peek out on trees,
wow.
Only in the very warmest spot. So,
yeah,
just a very little hint of green. Some of the underbrush is greened in. It looks like a fog under the understory of trees.
Yeah, we've got more rosy hillsides here. No really leafing out yet, and particularly up at elevations like where you live in Tunbridge when you're down this way and where we are up at about 1,000 feet. But spring is definitely here. I've noticed a few more birds that I did not hear a couple of days ago arriving, so that's always a good sign. And I've been telling folks on my music show, we have a little rain coming in, just a slight chance of rain later today and tonight, but over the weekend, rain, and I think we're going to see some movement of our amphibian friends around vernal pools and across our dirt roads and back roads. So people to be really careful, particularly this weekend, as we see that migration happen.
Yeah, it's amazing how bad it is for a frog to get driven over.
Yep. Be careful out there.
Interesting note on frogs. I see that there's a study that shows that that tree frogs in particular are damaged by roadside salt.
Yes.
So, they retain water because of it. And so keeping salt down on the roads minimally is always a good thing.
Yeah, and some towns are doing that. Yeah, I think that memo may have come from the Association of Vermont Conservation Commissions. Am I remembering that correctly?
That's correct.
Yeah, so good information from them and good to share that. Yep.
Yeah, I don't have that in my links yet. Maybe I'll get to putting that in there. So just the flow of today. This week we had Earth Day, and Earth Day was in some ways sort of a downer because so much is being attempted to be torn apart. And there are two messages, one from Gus Speth and one from Robert Repetto, that are in our show notes that are well worth listening to. And they basically point out that we've done a lot for the environment. There's no question about that. The Cuyahoga River is no longer
on fire.
8 feet flames.
No.
jumping up from it. But we haven't really become a sustainable world. We're still not behaving in a way that the world can survive. And so that requires a change in thinking. And that change in thinking, I think, comes from visiting with people, having discussions among our friends. And that takes me back to bird sighting. So Jane and I were at Shelburne Point yesterday, and we pulled in there, and there were no birds to be seen anywhere. No ducks on the water, fairly big waves lapping around. But we went and sat in our car, where she's capable of still moving around that way. And we looked out on the water and kind of got our binoculars out and looked around, and sure enough, there were some birds out there. We just weren't seeing them. And there were ducks that were diving ducks quite a ways out from shore, but they were going down and having themselves a meal and coming back up again. And they were all paired up. I counted four pairs out there, and they were all paired up and diving together and having their meals together. And then we feeling that we had seen what we could see there, and we were moving across the parking lot, and we spotted a bird up in a tree, and she spotted it right up the very tippy top of a tree, and I stopped the car, and we looked over, and that was a was a phoebe, and it flew off just about the time that we spotted it, got it in our binoculars. But there was a woman beside us that was sitting in a car, and she rolled her window down and said, "What are you looking at?" And we said, "Well, we're looking at that phoebe." And she said, "Oh, yeah, I saw that phoebe." She said, "I've been sitting here for 10 or 15 minutes watching this osprey eat a fish it had caught on top of that telephone pole."
Mm.
So there was a power pole across the street. And so that woman was a very private person, but she opened up as soon as she saw someone with a common interest. And I think that's finding those common interests is a way to open up those discussions. So maybe with that, we'll go on to Bird Note and listen to a little bit about ospreys. Okay. And I might say that I looked up about ospreys, and that fish, that bird had a pretty big fish, and we watched it for another 5 minutes or so, and it was eating the whole thing. And from the head right back down through the body. And it takes about a 10-inch fish every day to keep an osprey in good food supply. So
great information. I'm looking forward to spending some time with ospreys here in a few weeks when I travel back up to Midcoast Maine. You are tuned to, you've turned to Bird Note and Green Zine, et cetera, here at Free Vermont Radio. And let's go to Bird Note right now.
This is Bird Note. To the untrained eye, the osprey looks just like a bird of prey should. Talons, hooked beak, vivid yellow eyes. But it also has some characteristics that make it truly unique among raptors, especially when catching fish. In common with most raptors, it has four long toes, three in front and one in back. As the bird reaches for a fish, its outer front toe swivels to the rear, giving it two grasping talons front and back. And those toes are lined with short, stiff spikes for extra grip. The osprey's nostrils shut tight as it hits the water. Then, as it ascends, it shakes itself off, shedding water easily thanks to its oily feathers. In fact, it's the only raptor that has this oily plumage. Its long, slender, arched wings help the osprey get clear of the water, too, as it takes flight with the fish's head facing the front, the most aerodynamically efficient position. This osprey we see today, just one species worldwide, has changed little since tens of millions of years ago, when its ancestors diverged onto a unique evolutionary track distinct from eagles and hawks, suggesting that over this period, it has remained particularly well-suited to its environment, thanks to these adaptations. For BirdNote, I'm Michael Stein. Support for BirdNote comes from the Cornell Labs Bird Academy, with online courses for people of all knowledge levels. More at allaboutbirds.org.
All right, good information there about ospreys, Henry.
Yeah, so you don't have our guest in the studio
yet. Taylor has joined us. She has her headphones on. She's over
all
there
right.
by the
well,
microphone.
Just, yep. Just one more note on ospreys, and then we'll get into Catherine Hayhoe. I was looking up more information on ospreys and discovered that a connection to skateboarders.
Oh.
So skateboarders have each person has a preferential foot first, which they put ahead of the other on the board. And it turns out that ospreys do as well, that they carry their fish with either their right or their left leg forward, holding the fish.
Ah.
And it is totally temperamental to that particular bird.
Interesting you bring up skateboarding, because I don't know if you skateboarded when you first came to Vermont, Henry, but I don't snowboard, but I know there's a term they use in snowboarding when someone kind of goes the opposite way with their front foot, and it's called goofy, that person is boarding goofy. So maybe that's we have some goofy ospreys out there. Yeah.
That sounds good.
Okay, sounds good. All right, on to Catherine Hayhoe. What's she up to? We've featured her writings several times on Green Zine.
Yeah, she does. She does a pretty frequent newsletter, and a lot of them are uplifting. And this one I thought was a good transition to our guest Taylor Barnes from Joyful Farms, and it seems to me that. These people are coming from the same point. You want to read this, or shall I have a go at it?
How are you feeling today, Henry, as far as reading? Either way, works for me.
Okay, if you've got it up, I'll let you do it.
I do.
You're
okay.
A better reader than
I am. I'm going to adjust my microphone stand so I can see it better, but I'll be with you in just about 3 seconds. Maybe even 2 seconds. All right, these are the words of Catherine Hayhoe. We protect what we love, but how can we love what we don't know? Modern life often keeps us indoors, disconnected from the natural world. When was the last time you walked barefoot on grass, stopped in to listen to birdsong, or sat under a tree just to breathe? The more time we spend in nature, the more we value it, and the more motivated we are to protect it. But this isn't just about caring for nature, it's about caring for ourselves too. Nature gives back generously. As I've written about before, research shows the time outdoors cuts stress and can improve our mood. It sharpens our focus, lowers our blood pressure, and can even reduce inflammation linked to chronic illnesses. That's why doctors in many countries from Canada and the UK to Japan and New Zealand are now prescribing nature as part of a healthy lifestyle. And did you know there's an app to help with this? Boy, there's an app for everything. Nature Dose, I guess that's healthy, uses your phone's location to track how much time you spend outside each week. It offers reminders and challenges to encourage you to spend more time outside and help you notice how it affects your well-being. One tester of Nature Dose described how he appreciated knowing that I can typically correlate a week where I'm feeling more overwhelmed with a week where I spent less time outside. This is usually an after-the-fact confirmation, but also gives me motivation to get outside each day, regardless of other influences or weather. For me, more time outside is directly proportional with less mental anguish and more happiness. So this week, why not give it a try and see how it makes you feel? Even 20 minutes a day in a natural setting can reduce cortisol, a stress hormone. You don't need a forest or a mountain, just a patch of grass, a garden, a tree-lined street, or a park will do. The benefits are real, and they're within reach for nearly all of us. There, the words of Catherine Hayhoe.
Yes, I just thought that was, get outside, and maybe that is a good link to connecting with nature so that we learn that it's valuable to protect nature and to get harmony with Earth.
Indeed. So we're just about to introduce Taylor Barnes. I'm going to do actually another reading that was submitted by one of our this is a good shadow. Assistant producers here. It's from a book that's written about Pomfret, actually, North Pomfret. It's called Farms, Flatlanders, and Fords, a story of people and place in rural Vermont, focusing on the period of time between 1890 and 2010, and written by Cameron Clifford. It's just a short piece, and then we're going to welcome Taylor to the airwaves. While the United States reeled in turmoil during the 60s and 70s, North Pomfret struggled with its own sense of identity. What was the neighborhood becoming? Farming was gone. More newcomers came every year. Flimsy trailer housing was being set up at an alarming rate. Formerly benign activities like hunting and new activities like snowmobiling became widespread and irritating to newcomers. Natives found their position as overseers of the traditional political and cultural arena challenged. For years, farmers had struggled to make a living farming their land. Now they had opportunity to make money from selling off small lots. It seemed newcomers wanted to stymie their efforts. Contention gelled over the prolonged fight to establish town zoning land use regulations, which eventually became established in 1972. The establishment of zoning in Pomfret signaled an end to contention in North Pomfret. While a seemingly new order had been implemented, a funny thing happened. Natives found the regulations acceptable, and newcomers felt some aspects ineffectual. While the unintended consequences of this played out, both sides unexpectedly found themselves closer to each other in many ways than they had been before the era of contention had started. In short, natives and newcomers adapted to their changed neighborhood, devoid of farming and many of the vestiges of an earlier era, and made it into a new home for themselves. And Taylor Barnes, welcome to Green Zine here at Free Vermont Radio.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. And I know Pomfret.
I'm not hearing Taylor on her mic.
Her mic should be. Try that again, Taylor.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah, Henry hears you now. So, wow, I came across your and your husband's name in a couple of weeks ago, I guess in the 7 days, a sort of a story about the new Back to the Land movement, and I think three or four couples were interviewed in this piece, and you and Tatum were one of the couples. So can you just give us a little background before you moved to Vermont? I know you've lived in a couple places in Vermont, and then we're really going to spend some time on what you're doing on your small piece of land over there.
Yes, so I am originally from Pennsylvania, and my husband is from Brooklyn, New York. We met in college in Western Massachusetts, and we really knew that we liked a small town or like a village feel in terms of a community. So that's something as far as where we wanted to live, that was important to us. We did spend about 4 years, just under 4 years, in New York City, living in Brooklyn, in his hometown, while he went to grad school. And we really found Vermont through a lot of grace and synchronicity and circumstance.
Wow. So, yeah, from that's a big jump from Brooklyn, which, of course, is, wow. I mean, it's a very busy place, a lot of young people. It's kind of a hip spot to live, probably a pretty expensive place to live as well,
yes,
to coming to rural Pomfret. So how did you come across Pomfret? Did you meet people from up this way, or are you going to school, like you say, in Western Mass? That's not too far from the border of Vermont. So maybe you had some experiences here.
Right. So we had never been actually this far north. We did not know of the Upper Valley. Interestingly, one of our college classmates grow up in Pomfret, though we didn't know that at the time. So we were familiar with southern Vermont and had spent some time there on a spring break trip while we were both working in schools in New York City. And through all of the events related to the unfolding pandemic in spring 2020, to basically keep a long story a bit more shorter and more sustainable, we were planning a big wedding and farewell party and moving at the end of the spring into summer. Unfortunately, or perhaps just fortunately in a different direction, our plans were shifted because of the shutdowns, and we prioritized moving instead of what we were planning in New York. So in leaving, we were looking, well, where do we want to live? And really, we were drawn to the Upper Valley because of the available housing, actually. As we looked in Vermont, there were very few short-term, flexible rental options, and we actually found a place in Stratford where we lived temporarily. We also lived in Wilder and then finally settled in Pomfret, thankfully. We love it there, 4 years ago.
That's great. And and what's the plan when you decided, and I'll let you get in, Henry, when you moved here, did you think you were going to end up getting a plot of land and actually getting into farming, something that maybe you didn't really have much experience with before you came here? Was that part of the long-term plan?
Yes. So we went very quickly from, we love Vermont, we love the feel of it, the culture of it, the spaciousness, the peace, and the really in terms of nature, we're talking about that. That was the biggest draw, being able to be outside and having space to do such, getting into gardening and things like that. That was our goal long term. We just didn't know when it would happen or to what extent. I definitely want to clarify that we're very, I would say, like, alternative and kind of small scale, very small scale in our farming capacity and reach. And what we're also trying to produce in terms of crops are some artistic offerings, some creative workshops, things like writing, meditation, dance, on the land where we live.
Yeah, multidisciplinary.
Holistic.
Yeah, very good word there, Henry. Go ahead, Henry.
Yeah, I just for your reference, Taylor, my wife and I moved to Vermont from Brooklyn, New York, in 1965, and
was
a back to the land movement at that time as well, and we both had considerable college experience, and we shed all that and started doing what was important to us instead.
Mm-hmm.
it was a good life, and continues to be.
Yeah, and what I took away, I mean, I took a lot away from the various stories that were presented in this cover story from a couple weeks ago in 7 days. If people want to look it up, I believe it was called "The Good Life" is on the cover. When you talk about what struck me particularly about your story and your husband Tatum and your son Rafa,
Raphael,
that's a great name. I really like that. It's a cute little guy. hope I get to meet him sometime.
Yeah,
is that there is definitely an ethical and philosophical and environmental philosophy going on here with your decision making, and I'd like you to talk a little bit more about that. So it doesn't sound like, hey, we're going to become a market farm and we're going to go to the local farmers markets and sell a lot of produce. That's really not part of the plan. But just talk a little bit more about that sort of philosophy, and then what the plan is with food, if it's strictly for your own consumption, et cetera.
Yeah, thanks. So as far as our philosophy, I would say it's really about doing what we can creatively with what we already have. That has been a big theme out of both necessity and really our values, I think. Being low budget, we're finding a house that is exactly the house for us because it works and it's a fixer-upper and small and in our budget, like literally the only house that was. So things like that, and then realizing, okay, what can we do for additional income? Well, we can try to do hip camp. So we launched that our first year, spring and summer that we moved. And that has really become a huge focus of our land and our of Full Joy Farm. We offer a campsite rental that has been booked as early as February and as late as November. And we've been expanding that year by year. In terms of food, we've been gardening every year and expanding consistently. And we typically focus on growing greens, vegetables, a few flowers, a lot of tomatoes, but mostly like greens to supplement our family, provide our family produce in the growing season.
Mm-hmm. So you're not actively selling any of this produce?
Not at a farmer's market at this point. I would be open to that in the future. Right now, we're honing in on growing efficiently and effectively what we're best at and what we most consume. One thing we did start doing last year and will definitely expand this year is our mini farm stand, I will call it. Sometimes it's like out on the front lawn, but also in our mudroom. I'm starting to think about like t-shirt sales and crafts and different other offerings as an artist that I could bring into that business.
Yeah. Henry?
Wow. Yeah. So how about the spiritual side? I see a nod that you have a desire to do things with that. Is that what has have you manifested anything for the public consumption that might add to your income, or just for personal your personal spiritual health?
That's a good question. I'd say both. More so over the past few years, it's been a personal journey of just dealing with and giving grace in to ourselves as we learn in and be humble in terms of learning a lot of new things that we've never done before. We came from living in an apartment with no outside space to living on 2.5 acres and like having a lawnmower that we didn't want to do anything. At first, we were like, oh, we don't need that. No, yes, we do. We have to have paths to get around. Like the grass is 3 feet high. So a lot of learning curve, humbling, things like that has been good for our spiritual growth. And then I'd say now what we're really focused on, Tatum and I both, is bringing our offerings as creative people and as spiritually growing folk, we hope, to offer to the public in the form of workshops. So like I mentioned before, writing and meditation and things like that, dance. We live in Pomfret and both teach at Artistry. We're really inspired by that space as well as the general creative and arts community, cultural community in the performance sense or workshop sense. So we're trying to, certainly we are inspired by them and what we're doing at Full Joy Farm. And then we also teach in the community.
Wow.
And you're both parents of a young child. Boy,
yes.
Are there more hours in your day than are in most people's days?
Unfortunately not. It's all slow going into scale. I really want to emphasize that. For anyone listening, we are certainly new. We are certainly by no means perfect or trying for perfection, but we want to be encouraging where we are, like I said, using what we have, and hopefully through that process, our goal is to bring joy, which is part of our name.
Yeah. Hey, real quick question. I'm going to turn it back to Henry. And thinking back to the early days in a documentary that I saw at the White River Film Festival about the Back to the Land movement in the late 60s, when a lot of people from the city came up here, knew nothing about farming. But they did get a lot of help from their longtime Vermonter neighbors' farms. So have you come across that with folks in your area being helpful in getting the garden where you want it to be? Or are you doing it more by reading books? Or how has that worked out for you?
Oh, absolutely. I would say 1,000%. We have found that our immediate neighbors in particular are like amazing gardeners with many years of experience. And that has been such a blessing to not only know them, but live directly across the street from folks who really know what they're doing and have that background. And then just meeting folks in Vermont, it's like almost every other person has a garden, whether they're been really experienced or novices like us, and everyone's kind of sharing not only produce, which is great, but also information and just their approach and style of how they do what they do.
Right. I've got a lot of threads, yeah. But Henry, turning it back to you.
I don't know whether you want to, we're on the radio, so people aren't seeing you. Do you want to get into what you do, one of your day jobs, and at North Deptford?
Sure. So,
am I right about that?
Yes. So I can talk about what we both do. Tatum works in Parks and Rec, the Parks and Recreation Department in Hartford, Vermont. And he also, and this kind of ties in with the spirituality component too, he works as director of spiritual education at North Chapel in Woodstock, and we've been there for the last 2 years. And so I am a dance teacher and a dancer and a writer, and I work at New Suns Community Center in Thetford, where I'm teaching dance, running different arts-related or community-related workshops.
So with those right. with those careers, sort of, well, they're not necessarily side careers, but you're also, you know, working on your farmstead there. Mm-hmm. Are they going to be continuing important parts of your life? Maybe not at the same locations, but that part is something that you want to always keep integrated, or is there a goal like, well, we'd rather just be here on our property and doing workshops on the property, but I'm just kind of curious what as you look ahead the next 2, 3, 4 years.
I would say that we are definitely looking to be both in the community and on the land. Mm-hmm. As far as the land, what we want to do is deepen our experience and our skill in gardening, broaden how much and like the capacity that we can grow and perhaps offer to either people in need, mutual aid, or farm stand. And then in terms of the external focus in the community, I don't see that going away because we just really love collaborating. And I think I'll probably see more going out and more folks coming to our space as well.
Yeah, a lot of reciprocity.
Wow. Yes.
Yeah. Small state here, Vermont.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you're a great spirit to have where you're following the things that call to you and are finding a way to integrate that into your lives and the community and so forth, and that's one of the things I think that it happens a lot in Vermont, and I think it's very special that it is like that. That people collaborate and are not necessarily just chasing, you know, we all have to have enough money to survive, but doing the things that are important to us is just so important. I don't know if you have any recommendations for people who are listening as to how to get their lives further over into that zone. I know for me, one of the things is not having any debt gives me a lot of flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably not yet in that zone.
No, but we are not doing the same thing, but I hear you, and I think that is definitely encouraging, all that you've said. If I have to share with people, I guess I would just briefly say I encourage anyone who wants to live a more like land-based, seasonally-based, connected life, any of those terms, to really think about it as more this liberation and liberation in general as more of a subtractive process, as more of a decluttering instead of a how can I add on to what I'm already doing. What are you reclaiming attention maybe? What do you not need to do in your life, and how can that shift into being outside or growing plants in containers or things like that, starting small, and then just reading and learning from others?
Yeah, you know, my sense, and having read this piece that Henry supplied from Catherine Hayhoe, is that what you and your husband Tatum and your son are doing as far as being outside in nature as much as possible. And then even with your jobs, you're sort of still outside. You know, Dance, you say he works for Parks and Rec, so he's outside a lot. That maybe you don't necessarily need this Nature Dose app because you've already got the natural app going. Yeah. Hey, one quick thing before we let you go, just a couple of, you may be aware of places, and if you're still looking around and connecting with people and possibly even learning some additional things, and when you mentioned dance and performance and also gardening and et cetera, have you heard of the Sable Farm Project, the Sable Project?
Yes, I have.
Okay, I bet you do, because I think some of the folks that come up there are from Brooklyn or from the New York area to study during the summer, and they'll be having a whole series of events this summer again, so maybe we'll see you there. And then another young couple that is also kind of stretching out into art and music along with their farmstead is here in Tunbridge at the top of Bicknell Hill Road. You might want to check them out sometime. They're called, it's the Fledgling Farmstead, and they have a music festival which has also other elements to it, and that will be coming up later in August. So some more, as if you didn't already have enough to do, but just throwing that out there. Henry, any closing remarks or questions for Taylor?
No, I'm not coming up with brilliant ones. I put a plug in just for one of the things. I just had a friend of mine in Tunbridge who had their garden beds, which were very well-developed soil, had done a lot of work on them over quite a number of years, and high water in the first branch of the White River washed it all away. Mm. And they were basically back to having to rebuild soil again. And so I heartily recommend the work of David Johnson. You can listen, if you go to show notes, we had a talk with him on the air maybe a month and a half or 2 months ago, with his wife as well. And they do make compost with a lot of fungi in it. So high fungal component compost that then becomes an inoculant for building soil.
Right, back to the mycelium, yeah.
Right, and you can, and it's all doable by hand without it buying anything. So it's low cost. So no one knows about it because it's because someone isn't advertising it. And worms are also figure into there. So good way to recycle. I visited with a woman here in Burlington who had a pickup truck and was on our street, and she was picking up compost that people had set out by the roadside for her to pick up. And I talked with her, and she works for a farm that gathers that waste. People pay a small fee for having it picked up, and they compost it on their farm and use it for building their soil. Mm-hmm. So All good stuff.
Yeah, let's end on an earthy note and a question and then another recommendation, although I think you already... I'll start with the recommendation. Are you familiar with Fable Farm?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Might see out of Fable Farm sometime. That's been a project that's going on for a number of years and bordering Pomfret over in Barnard. And the other part was, so how are you guys happy with where your soil is right now? I know you've been working it for a couple of years. Yeah, pretty good shape.
Yes, I think we compost too. And as of last year, we started using the compost that we'd been creating. And we've definitely seen that be helpful for the soil.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Taylor Barnes, we want to thank you for coming by. Full Joy Farm is the name of your operation, right?
Yes, thank you for having
me. Now, you mentioned, I don't really need to know exactly where you live in Pomfret, but if you do have your mini farm stand, will people be able to find you? You're probably way up a dirt road somewhere.
Actually, no, we are on the main road.
The main road.
Yes, and it would definitely be visible, North Pomfret, right before you start going down the hill.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Towards the Queechee, West Hartford.
I ride my bike by there sometimes.
Yep, you'll see it there.
You'll see it there. Maybe I could bring a trowel with me or something to try to help out.
Oh, thanks.
All right, well, really, really thank you for coming by. I want to just cite another resource that's in this article, and we should mention who wrote the, Henry, you actually probably have the author of this Good Life story in front of you, because you spoke with her to try to track down our guest today. Do you have it there? I actually got turned to the front page here real quick. Anyway,
No, I'm on the wrong computer for that.
How many computers do you have?
I'm working on two computers today.
I've got it right here. It's Hannah. I don't know if it's pronounced Feuer or Fire. Feuer. I think put these stories together. Once again, you can find, if you want to read the whole story, four different farmers and their approach. You can find it in what issue? It's going back a couple of weeks ago, the April 9th issue of 7 Days. And we want to send a little something home with you. This is being donated. You should check it out.
Thank you.
That's from our anonymous assistant producer. She thought that you and Tatum might get just find out some more information about where you live.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Very good. Hey, glad to have you with us here on Green Zine. All right, Henry, we've got more time. Well, actually, we're about right on the clock, about 18 minutes left in the show here at WFERLP South Royalton. And if you missed part of the show or you want to tell someone else about it because they weren't able to listen now, the show will be up for replay starting tomorrow at 1 a.m. for a full week until we bring you the next edition of Green Zine.
And previous editions are pretty much all up. There's a few missings or ones that don't work, but I've attempted to put all of those links up on our notes page. So there's about a little over a year's worth of broadcast that you can revisit, and all the notes from those shows is quite a... I'm getting more greedy with taking up space with notes.
Well, they could just click on the link, yeah.
There's so much, yeah. So there's so much background material that's out there. So if you have an area that you want, and if you go to that links and you do a control find, where you can search the page you're on, you can look for particular topics that you're interested in finding more information about, and I think that will do a reasonable job of taking you to a particular group of episodes that that you might find useful for background information. So I had intended to start the show with yesterday's event. So my friend Mohsen, who has been incarcerated by ICE, had a hearing at the federal courthouse yesterday. And I went down there, as did 200 or 300 other people. And it is just amazing how much pushback the public is providing against the Wild West of the government at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say in the case of Mohsen, I mean, they are they're challenging his, they're wanting to deport him because he exercised his right for free speech. He did nothing that wasn't constitutional. You might say that leading rallies at Columbia to try to have the Israelis and the Palestinians understand each other best, and also to push back against the Israeli behavior with how they are decimating the whole Gaza area, is, you know, that's sort of against the policy of the government. The government's been happy with Israel doing whatever they want to do. If they track down any terrorists, they're said, you can do what you want. And so, you know, he was pushing back against that. And he's a green card holder. And that the Supreme Court has said that green card holders have all of the rights for free speech of a U.S. citizen. And so there have been many court filings that have been like that. This court filing, this court was to see if he had to remain in detention or what the situation was. And it was a federal judge. And he said, well, the administration has given us no argument for what he's done wrong and why he should be held. And therefore, until we'll have a hearing again next week, and next Wednesday, and see if they have come up with any kind of information or argument as to how he's actually a danger to our democracy or our country. And I don't think they have anything. They just want him gone because he doesn't toe their line in terms of what they want to have happen. He's exercising free speech. And at the rally, a lot of the protesters and the speakers were saying, you know, if you start eroding free speech, the next thing you have is no free speech for anybody. And everyone's under the threat of deportation. And, you know, we'll just box up the people who don't agree with us, and either get them to crawl back in their shells, or to, if necessary, we'll ship them off to some clandestine place where they can't be retrieved from. And I think the understanding that can be real, and Mohsen's back in jail for. But he says he's being well taken care of by the states. He's not. He's in a state prison, a Vermont state prison. He's not being held by ICE in some detention center. He's happy to have this play out because it will probably set the pace for the country as to what happens with free speech. I'm pleased to be a friend of his and to see him happily being the guinea pig for keeping democracy alive.
Yeah, you know, the clip that I heard when he was visited by Senator Peter Welch, very, very direct, very well spoken, not, you know, all bummed out, disrespectful, just kind of restating the importance of the First Amendment as applies to everybody in the United States, and also due process, which is guaranteed in the Constitution, which applies whether you're a citizen or not, if you are on U.S. soil. He was definitely a very strong spokesperson for those important principles. And yeah, like you say, we'll have to see what the next chapter brings. And also the fact the First Amendment, and well, in most places, we still have it. This radio station still has it. And people are gathering in meetings. I know there was another meeting the other night in Tunbridge. There's more actions planned around the country over the coming weeks and months. And there are a lot of letters to the editor, whether it's to The Herald, which I have in front of me, or the Valley News, or 7 Days. And I want to read one that's put in today's issue. You can find it on page B2. And it does touch on the implications for the climate by what's being done by the current administration in Washington. This is written by Beth Delano from Tunbridge, urging Congress to focus on people. She writes, "I am writing to urge our elected officials to do everything in their power to protect everyday people in our community instead of enabling Trump's tax breaks for billionaires and corporate polluters. The upcoming budget bill moving through Congress is a fight over our country's values and priorities. We must, one, protect climate and clean energy policies that are lowering our energy costs, cutting climate pollution, and creating good jobs nationwide. Stop Trump from selling off our public lands to the highest bidder and opening up the Arctic refuge for oil and gas drilling. Three, block cuts to vital government programs like Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. As a parent, healthcare provider, an active enthusiast of nature, I support climate action, clean air and water, and protecting our public lands. We need the government to protect people over corporate polluters who bought access to Trump. That's why I'm urging my representatives to do more to fight for us."
So, along the same line, the demise of Eden is an event that's coming up at 2 o'clock today at the law school. And there, in the links, there is a, you can join that either online or sign up for going in person. How the state and federal agencies are failing the New England biodiversity. So this is about biodiversity being resilient and important and building a livable world, and how that's being messed with.
Yeah, and just a quick correction, you're right, it is today, but it's starting pretty soon. It actually is starting here at the law school at 12:45.
Oh, 12:45.
12:45, yep, through 2 p.m., so just under an hour from now, yep.
Yes, okay. And there's more action and events that you can do. Lost River Integrated Resource Project Open House. So this is also tonight from 6 to 7:30. And that's a project for environmental assessment and taking action on that. Vermont Clean Climate Action Plan public input session happens on, is open now through May 1st. And there's a link there that you can put some effort in. Worcester Range Ramble, May 3rd. So that's a join Standing Trees and members to moderate a walk in the beautiful corner of Vermont, Worcester Range. And there's more from Standing Trees. I believe I have another piece in Standing Trees in here. Yeah. So in the notes, there's more from Standing Trees. lots and lots of things you can do.
Well, I've got a few here, Henry. I'm going to look once again, our local weekly paper. Here's something that combines community farming and poetry. And National Poem Town Month is wrapping up here in April. But on Saturday, a place that a lot of us are familiar with at the Silloway Sugar House on Boudreaux Road in Randolph Center, three farmers are going to present poetry. This is all happening Saturday night at 7 p.m. One of the farmer poets I actually know pretty well, Taylor Martis Katz. She's a poet, herb farmer, and shopkeeper living in Chelsea. She and her husband, Sasha, I think his name, they run Freeverse Farm Shop. Also, Katie Spring, who is a writer, mother, and co-creator of Good Heart Farmstead in Worcester, Vermont. She will be reading, and she believes that creativity is as essential as food, and her writing is a testament to the ways that creativity nourishes us. Finally, poet, farmer, Greg Bernhardt is going to be there. Goats and Those Who Live By Them. He has a novel, and When Everything Was Possible. He's also a professional painter and artisanal cheesemaker and farmer at Blue Ledge Farm. This is a free event out at the Silloway Sugar House Saturday night at 7 p.m. On the solar front, Henry, Amos Post's Integrity Energy, up in Brookfield, they have signed a contract. We're not going to be the only town garage in the immediate area that has solar. Brookfield going solar out at their town garage. So good news up there in Brookfield.
Yeah, and there's an opportunities as well. This is an interesting thing. This is from the losing the name of it. Anyway, the opportunity is to make an application and join to learn to be a climate catalyst leadership program. It's a 6 months experience that provides new and emerging leaders with the opportunity to build peer connections and basically get launched in the world of and that's not only free, but if you are, you can even get paid for having joined that, if you like, in our notes.
Right. Hey, something else that's going on this weekend. You know, Earth Day was a few days ago, but Drive Electric Earth Month is not over. And down in the Upper Valley, both Saturday and Sunday, several events happening, mostly around the Lebanon area. And you're asking, what events are they? You can visit neighbors at 24 homes, one school, and one church in the Upper Valley Earth Week open house to see and discuss the earth-friendly strategies they're using to do less harm to their families, their communities, and the planet. Visitors will be welcomed both Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Register to attend before 9 p.m. tonight. So you need to go to this website. There's going to be all kinds of things about solar power, electric vehicles, heat pumps for heating and cooling, insulation, induction stoves, water heaters, electric bikes, and lawn care tools. New Hampshire and Vermont, there's going to be 5 sites in Norwich, 2 sites in Thetford, 5 in White River, 1 site in Wilder, and a bunch across the river. Here's where you need to go to sign up by 9 p.m. tonight. It's pretty easy to remember. Drive Electric Earth Month. Yep, driveelectricearthmonth.org and learn a whole lot more about lessening your carbon footprint. Real quick, Henry, with just over a minute to go, we want to thank our underwriters here on Green Zine. They've been supporting us a long time. They include Solaflect, Bail, Royal Trailworks, Daniel Leibowitz, Upper Pass Beer Company, First Branch Coffee Company, Wit and Grit, the Yes We Can Collective, and Solar Fest, coming up with a series of workshops and music and camping and all kinds of fun for the entire family on August 7th, 8th, and 9th. over in Brandon, Vermont. And I think Henry and I are going to be there. We may even have to do some work over there, Henry. You up for it?
Okay, I'm up for it.
Okay, I'm counting you in. All right, pleasure being with you. Yep, go ahead.
Pleasure being with you. We'll see if we can get the Environmental Defense Fund to talk about their pushback against dismantling the EPA.
Yeah, I'd like to talk to the Environmental Defense Fund. All right, we're going to leave you with a little auto harp from Harvey Reed. You've been listening to Green Scene on WFBR LP South Royalton. Stay tuned for Democracy Now!